Hello, and welcome to Birdies and Beer. This is the Unique Lifestyle Podcast featuring all things golf and craft beer. Recording from the Business Radio X studio outside Atlanta, here's your host, Tim Stoltz.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Salmon, our producer, and I want to introduce a couple of very, very cool people, our first guests in our maiden voyage of Birdies and Beer. This is the first we've ever done. We're excited about the podcast and future endeavors for Birdies and Beer, and look forward to providing some interesting and informative content each week as we explore this subject, these subjects. And our first two guests, I said, two people with very cool jobs. Our Birdies guest is the executive director of the Tour Championship, Allison Fillmore. Hello, Allison.
Hello, Tim.
And our beer guest is Brian Bongesser, one of the partners of Gate City Brewing. Bongesser. I screwed it up already, didn't I, Brian? Gate City Brewing here in Roswell, Georgia. Hey, Brian.
Hello.
Brian, I notice you are empty-handed.
I am empty-handed. Yeah, I apologize for that. I had planned on bringing samples, but I had something come up that I had to go run to and didn't have time to go back by the brewery.
We can stop by after.
Yeah, please do, actually.
Okay, good.
Let's do that.
Stop by the tap room, Gate City. Well, you two are certainly, you have an inside track to be in the Birdies and Beer Hall of Fame as our first guest ever.
Fabulous.
For at least a week, this is going to be the best Birdies and Beer podcast ever.
Awesome.
So, congrats on that.
I like that.
Setting the bar low. I like it.
Speak for yourself.
Mike, let's kick off a birdie segment. So the PGA Tour season-ending event is the Tour Championship, and this year it is September 19th through 23rd at East Lake Golf Club here in Atlanta. And as I mentioned, Allison Fillmore, the executive director of the Tour Championship, joins us. Allison, how in the world did you become the executive director of the Tour Championship?
Good question. I ask myself that question every day. Now, I've been in sports in Atlanta for quite a long time. In fact, I go way back with our host here. Moved to Atlanta in 2002, have been involved with the Falcons, the Atlanta Dream, Atlanta Motor Speedway. And in May, I got a call from the PGA Tour talking about this tournament, and I saw it as an awesome opportunity. PGA Tour is a great place to work. Fabulous family values. Jay Monahan is an awesome commissioner. He's super down to earth and is really looking to create change and make this more of a lifestyle event for all of our golf tournaments. You know, really focusing on the fans, the players, and the partners. So it was just a natural progression, and honestly, I could see myself retiring here. I love what I do.
Terrific. This is your second event, but your first as the executive director.
Correct.
I
became the executive director back in October of last year. I was the senior director of sales. So this has kind of been my first foray into managing the tournament. So got a lot of great team members to help.
Well, so as we near the 60-day mark.
Yes.
Before the
72
events,
to be exact.
Okay. Not that anybody's counting, right?
No.
So challenges, things that have surprised you as you've gotten ready for this first year?
Well, we just started our build on course on Friday. So it's amazing to see what the guys have done over the weekend. Our media center floor is down. Our triple decker floor is down. So that's been really interesting to see. You know, really we're trying to create experiences for folks on course, whether it be we're working with Coca-Cola to create this venue on 8 Green that we're partnering with Acme Oysters. So it's going to be oysters and Coca-Cola. We are going to have a wine bar up on 7. We have the Grey Goose Lounge 19th hole up on 12. There's going to be an Uber entrance where you can come in and get some snacks from one of our partners. So really, it's all about attracting a fan base so everyone can come. Whether you're a child, kids get in for free with a ticketed adult. Whether you're a mom that wants to drink some wine and watch golf. Or whether you're a dad that's a core golfer, there's something there for everybody.
Very good. This is the 15th consecutive year at East Lake. Am I correct on that?
Correct. 2004 was when it solidified its space there. So actually this would be 15.
And any changes?
Yes, there are some big changes this year. First off, we are creating something that's called the 1904 Club. It's a brand new hospitality venue that's going to be located in our clubhouse. It's very exclusive, high-end, all-inclusive food and beverage, concierge service, valet parking. We'll have four celebrity chefs that will be there each day. Chris Hall, Dee Dee and Nan from Nan's Fine Dining on 17th and Spring. Kevin Gillespie and Kevin Rathbun are all going to be joining us in the 1904 Club. They'll host one day where they'll be serving all of our guests and mingling with the crowd. So we're really looking forward to this. It's taken off very well. A lot of companies in Atlanta have purchased them already because we're only selling 500. So it's going to be a very exclusive experience. The second thing that we're doing was we're changing our entrance. Our main entrance is going from one side of the venue to the other to really create a VIP entrance for that 1904 Club. But also we feel that it'll be easier to come into the course, and then you'll actually see the entire course in front of you when you walk through the gate. The new entrance will be behind 14 Green 15T, and you'll walk in right between there. And once you walk in, you see the entire facility in front of you, the beautiful clubhouse, the lake, the front nine, the back nine. So it's a much more inviting view when you walk in.
Excellent. Why 1904?
1904 was the first year that Eastlake was built, so that's when it was started. This is the home of Bobby Jones, first place he played, last place he played. So you'll find a lot of references to Bobby Jones within the clubhouse and within what we're doing. You know, we have a room inside that's going to be called the Boathouse Pub because there used to be a boathouse at Eastlake before Tom Cousins purchased it. There was a boathouse, there was a pool, there were tennis courts, there was a lot of, it was very different. Then our ballroom is being transformed into a seated dining restaurant called Kilty's, and Kilty was Bobby Jones' professional. He taught him how to play golf. So a lot of things will tie back into Bobby Jones and the history of the golf club.
Terrific. You have had a busy day today already.
I have.
Tell us what's happening.
So our schedule came out for the first time for 2018. I'm sorry, for 2018 and 19. And the Tour Championship is moving from its current dates of September 19th through the 23rd. And will be played August 21st through the 25th of 2019. And that's really to create a sequential, you know, time frame in terms of the most exciting events in golf, then following up with the last three FedEx Cup tournaments or FedEx Cup playoffs to really own the month of August. That's the goal. You've got, you know, players will be in March. In April, you've got the Masters. In May, you've got the PGA Championship. In June, you've got the U.S. Open. July, the Open Championship. And then in August, you've got the FedEx Cup playoffs and the culmination of the season with the Tour Championship.
That is terrific news.
Yes, we're very excited about it. You know, it was we wanted to take away the opportunity for fans. Well, we wanted to give the fans an opportunity to attend the events because we understand college football and professional football are big in this town, and we want to make sure that our fans have the opportunity to attend both. So that was a big, big motivator to move the schedule.
So in the past, I know some of the Saturday rounds were, in fact, in the morning to
Correct.
Accommodate college football. I assume that will change.
Correct.
Now?
Yes. It was the Notre Dame game because of NBC. I don't think we're moving this year. We haven't gotten the word yet. But, yes, that will not happen next year. I'm pretty excited about that.
Allison, is it hard when you have an event this size to just move the date like that, or is it something you guys have to plan years in advance?
We've been planning for many, many years about this. In fact, you know, just little things like the hotel, you know, making sure that that's available because we have to have rooms for our players. So making sure that's correct. You know, everything that we do affects our partners, you know, the Eastlake Foundation, the First Tee of Atlanta. We have to make sure that we're in sync with everybody when we make this change. And it wasn't just us. It was so many tournaments. The PGA Tour moved two tournaments that will go into the back half of the 19 schedule. Then you've got two new tournaments, the 3M and the Quicken Loans tournament. I'm sorry, Rocket Mortgage tournament will be in Detroit this year. So those are two new. Houston and Greenbrier moved to the fall of 2019 schedule. So it's been really interesting to see how the tour has been handling this move. They've done it really, really well. They've planned it out very strategically.
And you anticipate this will improve every aspect for you. Ticket sales, TV ratings.
Absolutely. Ticket sales, TV ratings. You know, honestly, we did this for our fans, for our partners, and for the players. They're very excited about it. So they're, you know, that was our big driver. We had to make sure that everybody was okay with it first before we did it. But we feel like we've got the infrastructure at East Lake to accommodate a whole bunch more fans. So everybody can come out and enjoy the tour championship next year. But don't forget about this year, too.
Absolutely. September 19th through 23rd.
Yes, yes, sir. You got it.
And how would one go about coming to view the Tour Championship?
Well, glad you asked. By going to tourchampionship.com, you can purchase tickets right there. We've got, you know, great grounds tickets that give you a ton of experiences on course. We've got upgraded hospitality options you can purchase right online. Or just by calling the office, you can look to do more hospitality with your company or your organization. As they say, the most business gets done during Thursday and Friday of Tour Championship week on the golf course. So there's many opportunities to host clients and host guests at the Tour Championship.
I have been fortunate enough to host clients and guests in the hospitality at the Tour Championship, and it is fantastic.
Well, thank you.
It is fantastic. One more thing I wanted to ask about when I was on the website were volunteers. I see that they are they still looking for volunteers?
Absolutely.
And what do volunteers do? What does that entail?
We've got positions available in many different areas. Our tournament would not run if it weren't for volunteers. We have about 1,300 to 1,400 volunteers that come in and help us over tournament week. So from admissions to parking to golf carts, you name it, we have positions available. So there's a link that you can go to right on the tourchampionship.com, click on volunteers, and there's all the information that you would need in order to volunteer. And you get a lot of good swag too.
Oh.
Shirts, hats, all that good stuff.
So there is swag, because I noticed you also empty-handed today.
Yes, you know what? In fact, the same thing happened to me. I mean, I went downstairs to get something, and boom, I lost track of time, and don't worry.
You're getting schooled in Radio 101. Both guests are getting schooled.
Yep.
Whenever you go to any
checks
TV
in the mail,
or
Tim.
Radio appearance, bring swag.
Okay, gotcha.
Absolutely.
I was held up
in
the parking lot. I had it with me.
I got a 10% off coupon for tickets. There you go.
We'll be here all day if you want to come back.
Okay, good. Yeah, that 46 miles it took me.
Now, Allison, you don't know this, and Tim doesn't know this either, but you and I have a lot in common.
Uh-oh.
I've also been in sports management. I've managed and run arena football teams and minor league hockey teams. You talked about your past with the Atlanta Dream.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you mentioned, was it Atlanta Motor Speedway or Road Atlanta?
Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Atlanta Motor Speedway, so where they have multiple races, or the Dream where they have multiple games.
Yes.
What's the difference when you're managing an event that's just one time a year? You're planning 365 days a year for 1 week.
Yes.
How
yes.
is that different from what you had been doing?
You only have one opportunity to make a first impression, so everything has to be perfect. Your time management also is very different. We've got everything planned out from, okay, what happens in October, what happens in November, to what happens in May or June. It's very specific and very strategic. You know, while people think, wow, I've had so many times people come up to me and say, you work year-round for the tournament? Well, yes, it's a full-time job because we are trying to create something that's special, make this an event that's a true Atlanta event. So you're going to be seeing some different press releases coming out here soon about some different things we're doing in the community. But really, when it comes down to it, we're planning all year round, like you said, for this. So it's not game day every day. It's game day for about a good month leading up to the event. So our hours get long and our time gets very, very busy.
It revs up, and then that week and a half, it's just crazy.
Oh, yes.
Then the event ends.
And
I've covered the Olympics, and where, you know, you rev up for the Olympics, and then you bust your butt for, you know, 3 weeks, and then it's just over, and you're like, it's so sad. It's a letdown.
It's so
what
sad.
What is it like when your event's over now?
It's such a bummer to, like, walk on the course and see them ripping down the hospitality venues. It makes me so sad, but it also makes me realize what we did and what all the hard work we put into the event, and excited for new and exciting ideas and changes for the year after. So all good.
So what at the end of these events, what about it makes you guys say, okay, this was a success?
Well, it's all about the fans and kind of the information and the feedback we get from them. We send out a survey right after the tournament's done. We send it to our ticket holders, to our corporate partners, and we ask for their feedback. Honestly, too, I call a lot of the season ticket holders, a lot of the people that purchase tickets. I have an hour drive to and from work, so that's what I do on my drive. And I don't get a lot of people saying, Allison, this is a miserable tournament. Everybody really enjoys being there. Eastlake is very small. You can really be close to the players. It's a great opportunity to really get up close and personal with them. So we don't get a lot of bad feedback, but honestly, I want to take every bit of that feedback into consideration so we don't exclude any fans from coming to the tournament ever.
I know the PGA Tour is huge in charitable donations.
Yes.
Who is the recipient of the Tour Championship charitable donations?
Well, we have two major partners of ours, and that's the Eastlake Foundation and then the First Tee of Atlanta. They are the Eastlake Foundation has been around since 1994, started by Tom Cousins. The First Tee of Atlanta is something that the tour is very focused on. They do a great job of giving back to the community and really teaching the game of golf to kids that wouldn't necessarily be able to afford to learn the game. So I'm excited to get my kids into it once we move up to Atlanta.
Very good.
Yes.
One more time for people that want to buy tickets to the Tour Championship.
TourChampionship.com. Or if you want to go and engage with us on Facebook, TourChampionship.com/playoff finale. Playoff finale on Twitter as well as Instagram as well.
Very good.
Awesome.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Tim.
We are going to move on to our beer segment.
Woohoo. Makes me thirsty.
Gives me a headache.
So Brian Bongesser.
Born Gesser.
Born. Why do I keep doing that? Probably because I wrote it down wrong. Brian Born Gesser of Gate City Brewing is here with us. Gate City right here in Roswell. One of the 21st fastest growing brewery. Is that correct?
That's correct. In the country. Yep.
That is fantastic.
So it was a nice little surprise. We weren't expecting to hear that. The Brewers Association reached out to us and said, hey, we're about to send out this press release. Congratulations. And we're like, oh, that's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
So what led you to start Gate City?
My wife bought me a homebrew kit about 12 years ago now. And so I started homebrewing, and my partner, Pat Raines, we met through the Roswell Rotary Club. We were both 20, I think he was 25, I was 27 at the time. And we just kind of hit it off. If you're familiar with Rotary, it tends to be a little bit of an older crowd, and we were two of the younger ones in there. So we kind of naturally gravitated towards one another. He's from Portland, Oregon, which has a huge, huge craft beer scene. He's got into home brewing right around the same time that I did. And we just started brewing together on the weekends and working on recipes. We both had corporate jobs and we're happy with our positions, but always had kind of had the thought of maybe doing something on our own. And so we started kind of putting numbers together for a business plan. And it took us about 5 years to kind of get something on paper that we felt good about. And it only took 5 years because we weren't that serious about it.
Right.
And then as it started coming together, we realized, wow, like we're making good recipes. We're winning some homebrew awards. And the numbers seemed to make sense. We both live in Roswell. We raised our families in Roswell. And so we wanted something really in our backyard, something to be close to home, get rid of the hour commute. We went out and bootstrapped it, and we've been open 3.5 years now. So it's been a crazy, crazy ride.
And in general, craft breweries are popping up since you've opened, seem to be opening up on every street corner.
Yeah, there's been some very big changes in the state of Georgia. Prior to September 1st of 2017, we couldn't sell directly to the public. We had to do the ticket system, sell a tour. You could then sample 32 ounces of product in a glass that we had to give to you. So there was no direct sales, which made it hard for breweries to enter into the market because the margins in beer are small, especially when you're in the wholesale world. And you've got to be able to scale up to make those dollars work. So a lot of breweries, like the barrier to entry was high. And now with that law change and where people can actually serve on their premise, and the margins are much better, and you have 100% control over your product and the experience that your customers are having there, the barrier to entry is a lot lower. And so you're seeing people that don't need an amazing amount of capital to buy the equipment to go into the wholesale market right away. They can open up a much smaller production facility, a much smaller tap room, and still provide a really good product and a really good experience, which they couldn't have in the past.
Brian, why is that? I've talked to other craft brewers, and they said at first the rules were very tough. You couldn't sell directly to the public.
Correct.
Was it politics? Was it the big brewers just didn't want the competition? Why was that?
A lot of it was, I guess, if you want to fall out from prohibition. I mean, the setup of the three-tier system. So with manufacturing not being able to sell direct, it's part of the three-tier system. So if you're involved with manufacturing, you can't be involved with the sale. If you're involved with the manufacturing, you can't be involved with the distribution. So you as a manufacturer have one customer, essentially. You have your distributor. You sell everything to your distributor. The distributor is your middleman that then goes off to the accounts and will either sample product alongside our brand ambassadors, because our salespeople can't sell it direct. And then you try and get draft accounts or package accounts based off those visits, kind of working in cahoots with your distributor. It all just comes back from prohibition and the three-tier system. And so Georgia and Nancy Palmer and the Craft Brewers Guild have been fighting for a very, very long time to try and get those laws changed for direct sales out of a brewery. It doesn't make sense if you're one of the only industries that can't actually sell directly to the public, even though you're manufacturing it right there. And when they were able to get the politicians to see, because a lot of them didn't even know how it worked. It's just what it was always done, and that, you know, why mess it up? But as we started having these conversations with these politicians, even they were like, well, wait, this doesn't make sense. Why can you not be able to sell your own product? I can't get my head wrapped around that. And we're like, all right, well. And then there's the argument with the distributors, where I think there's a little bit of protectionism in there, which I understand. I get it. There's a little fear of not knowing, okay, what's this going to do to their business? And we kind of look at it from the manufacturing side of, it's a marketing tool for us to help them sell more beer out in market as well. And I think since the laws changed, the numbers have actually shown that. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting to see how you go from the state of fear into understanding, and then all of a sudden, you know, the rising tide lifts all the ships, right? So it's been a very, very interesting year, and it hadn't even been a year. We're coming up on a year in September. So, you know, we'll see.
To follow up on something that Tim said as well, in the last three and a half years since you've been in business, the craft brewers just seems like they're on every corner these days.
They are.
Do you have any concerns that the quote-unquote bubble might burst at some point?
There's definitely a limit. We actually had a guild meeting yesterday, our July quarterly meeting, and we had someone from the National Brewers Association come in and talk about numbers. Compare Georgia to other states, and you basically always base it on per capita. So how many breweries per capita? Georgia is way down there, and a lot of that was because of the restrictions prior to September 1. And now that that's changed, and we can see how many people are out there trying to actually get their TTB license and open up. They call them breweries in dreaming, right? Like, they're trying to get open. Georgia's now starting to come up, and there is a threshold there where you tend to oversaturate, but we're way off from that. I mean, if you look at Portland, or if you look at Asheville, if you look in, you know, Virginia is starting to really pop up. Texas has got, well, their laws are weird too, but they've got more than we do as well. So at some point, yes, but I think it's going to take a lot and a long time for those to kind of come up. And with all these new breweries opening in too, the game gets stepped up. You know, everyone's trying to be the neighborhood brewery. They want to be the local. We're out of Roswell. I can go down in Decatur, and I might as well be in South Carolina. That's how local everything's becoming. And there's a cool part about that, but there's also kind of a frustrating part about that too. But everyone's proud of their little neighborhood brewery, and you know, we tried to really harness that and use it to our advantage. And we have breweries open up in Roswell now too that we're really good friends with. We've got great relationships with them. There's one, Variant Brewing. They open up in November. And I was over with him today because we're talking about doing some collab projects or something like that. So it's an interesting industry, and the fact that the majority of us all get along and are pretty collaborative, which I think at some point that might change too.
For now, that's for now. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's always been pretty open. And I think that, to go back to your question, there is going to be a saturation point, but I think that Georgia is really far off from that.
What are you doing to differentiate yourself from the other breweries? Like, since there are so many right now.
Sure. We try to control that in our tap room. So from a marketing and kind of our calling card, if you will, mm-hmm. we're pretty much an open air tap room. We've got six big garage doors. On a nice day, you can raise up and the outside comes in, and vice versa.
It's a very cool vibe, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. We focus on trying to have 18 beers on tap at all times, which doesn't really make us any different than the majority of the other breweries out there as well. But we don't focus on any one style. Like, we might have three IPAs on the board, but then we have all these other different styles that people might not be aware of. Mm-hmm. And we try to use our tap room as an education piece. We are in Roswell, where the beer community is way different than it was 3 years ago when we opened up. And we've tried to treat it as somewhat of an educational piece too, where we can go in there and we can brew these different styles. People can come in, they can try something that they might not like. One of my favorite things is when I have, and not to pick on women, but they're not necessarily, most of them aren't very big beer centric, mm-hmm. right? So they'll come in and they'll have, like, they want to always drink the lighter styles. So you get to talking with them, like, well, do you like chocolate? Do you like coffee? Oh, I love those flavors. Well, why don't you just try this porter, this Terminus porter? And then before they leave, they're drinking three or four of those, and they just discovered that, okay, I actually do like other things, but I was scared of it either from color or, you know, whatever one bad experience might be. Mm-hmm. So the tap room is a fun educational piece to us. We try to make ourselves different by really providing an experience in-house that then should help us then go out and sell beer out in market, whether it be go to a grocery store and pick up a six-pack, go to a restaurant and order a draft. We try to really control that on our site and hope that that's going to make us be rememberable, I guess. Memorable.
Memorable.
Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. There you go.
Do you and Pat still actively create recipes and experiment?
We do. I got out of it for a while just – the way that the business kind of came about is Pat came on first. My wife wasn't working at the time, so I couldn't quit my job. We had two little kids. So I had to keep my job, and it worked out better financially and just made sense for him to come on first. His wife had a full-time job, was fine. They have kids too, but they could manage it. So Pat came on and obviously took over production because someone has to brew beer. So I would go in and we would mash in. At 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd go home, shower, put on a suit, go into work, leave the office at 10, go change, help him mash out, and go back to work. So I did that for a year and a half.
So it sounds like you were sleeping 3 hours a night, maybe?
Something like that. Okay. With an infant at home, yeah. That's about right. And so Pat took over the production side there. So when I came on full time, I kind of, we don't really keep titles, but it's kind of like the CEO role, I guess, where I pretty much make sure that the business is running, bills are getting paid, employees are onboarded properly, tap rooms taken care of. And I've just recently actually had capacity to kind of get back in on that production side and start looking at recipes and do some fun things, which I very much have missed and very much enjoy getting back into. Pat's still involved with it on a day-to-day basis, running the production side and operations. But we also have our production staff there that we really encourage to experiment and bring some of the recipes that they might be working on or have ideas for and sit around and kind of start putting stuff together. And then we have three different systems that we can test them out on. So we have a one barrel, which is 31 gallons, that we can do like super small batches on to see if there's a total new style that we're not familiar with that we might want to run through. And then we can step it up to a 7-barrel system, and then we have our 30-barrel system, which is all our production beers, everything that goes out into distribution.
And how far, you mentioned how localized everything's become, but how far is your reach right now? Where do you have Gate City being distributed?
Well, we are set up to be distributed statewide. So United, our distributor, they have three warehouses, and we're set up with all three of them. So you can get us in Savannah, you can get us in Albany, you can get us in Macon. We don't have sales staff to really go out and support those or that far out. So we're working on building a larger sales staff now to kind of get us more coverage in the metro area, with some focus down in Savannah because it's a really cool market that I think we see as a good place to expand. But right now, like we've always focused, our business model is always take care of our backyard first, do everything in Roswell first. And I was telling someone this morning that it's absolutely baffling to our distributor that our number one accounts out in market are within 5 miles of the brewery, which they're like, that's normally crazy. Like right. Normally they won't want to carry your beer because they see you as a competitor. But we've worked really hard to be a good partner, be a good neighbor, and make sure that those folks are taken care of and know that we're not a threat, that we're there to work with them to kind of bring everyone together and raise everybody up. And we're starting to kind of push out from there. Like we're in Kroger statewide, we're in Publix statewide, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, Total Wine. Just last Thursday, we canned our 100,000th can on our canning line that we've only had for 3 months. So that kind of volume has been crazy good for us, which just means growth, which just means constant change. And while it's been an awesome run, this year is just – it's insane. Like Pat and I are just – our heads are spinning just trying to keep it all under control, which is a good problem to have.
Right, right. Like, well, congrats on the success.
No, thanks. I appreciate it.
Quickly, the tap room, as I said, very cool vibe. Give us a taste of some of the things that you do there and the events that you have.
So we always have live music. It's either Friday and Saturday or just Saturdays. Depends on the acts that we find. We've increased our budget for bands to make sure that we get a higher quality acts in there. We've started bringing in outside stages so that we can move the bands outside in this open air, like not a parking lot, but a patio space that we have. We do all kinds of private events. We do Geeks Who Drink Trivia is actually starting tonight. We're going to give that a run, see how that works. We went and tried that at New Realm a couple weeks ago, and it's a really cool twist on the old trivia model. So we're excited to see how that works out. We've done vinyl nights where we've had local guy come in with his record player and just a stack of records and let everyone just kind of throw something on there. We try to keep food trucks there at least 3 days a week, always on weekends, and then we try and sprinkle them in around Wednesdays and Thursdays. But we're open 7 days a week because we're walkability in of downtown Roswell. It makes it easy for us to do so. So we try to provide a really fun experience, and we've kind of become known for that. People make the jokes that on Saturdays it's almost like a romper room in the brewery because there's a lot of young families in Roswell, and there's a lot of strollers that get parked up there. I've seen photos where it's just like 15 strollers in a row. But, hey, parents got to hang out too.
Absolutely.
But don't drink and stroll.
That's right.
Whoa.
That's our public service announcement.
Thank you, Brian. I encourage everybody to patronize both Gate City Brewing and buy tickets for the Tour Championship this fall. They are both amazing.
What's your address?
Our address is 43 Magnolia Street. We're at the corner of Magnolia and Canton, right on the strip of downtown Roswell. We're right there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And also a website people can visit?
www.gatecitybrewingco.com. And find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as well.
I don't know why people still say WWW. You don't actually you don't even need that anymore.
I'm old school, man.
Yep.
All right.
I'm 38.
Oh, you're a baby.
Well, thanks so much, Brian Borngesser of Gate City Brewing, and Allison Fillmore, Executive Director of the Tour Championship. Appreciate both of you being here. Thank you to Mike Salmon and Business Radio X. You can find links to this and future podcasts at birdiesandbeer.com, as well as links to our guests' website, GateCityBrewingCo.com and theTourChampionship.com. Thank you both for being here. And until next time, hit them straight.